Blog Talk Radio.
Hey man, what it is, man?
This is KG.
Yeah, KG, what's up, G?
Yo man, me and Ice Cube got this movie episode in effect, you with it?
Yeah man, yo Chuck, man, check this out, man. KG and Ice Cube on the phone, they wanna go to movies, man. You with it, man? Come on, get your ass out the shower, let's go, man.
Burn, Hollywood, burn, I smell a ride going on. First the guilty, now they're gone, yeah, check out a movie. But it'll take a black one to move me. Get me the hell away from this TV. All the news and views are beneath me. So all I hear about is shots ringing out about gangs putting each other's head out. So I'd rather kick some slang out. Alright fellas, let's go hang out. Hollywood or would they not make us all as bad like I know they had? But some things I'll never forget, yeah. So step and fetch this shit. For all the years we looked like clowns, the joke is over, smell the smoke from all around.
Big Daddy is smooth word to mother. Let's check out a flick that exploits the color. Rolling through Hollywood late at night. Red and blue lights with a common sight. Pull to the curb, get played like a sucker. Don't fight the power, the motherfucker.
As I walk the streets of Hollywood Boulevard, big and hard it was for those who starred in the movie portraying the roles of butlers and maids, slaves and hoes. Many intelligent black men seem to look uncivilized when on the screen. Like I guess I figure you to play some jigaboo on the plantation. What else can a nigga do? And black women in this profession, after playing a lawyer, out of the question. For what they played, Angel Mama is the perfect term, even if now she got a perm. So let's make our own movies like Spike Lee, cause the roles being offered don't strike me as nothing that the black man could use. Use the urn. Burn Hollywood, burn.
Now we're considering you for a part in our new production. How do you feel about playing a controversial Negro?
Yeah, I'm with it. You mean somebody like you would be new? Brown, right?
Well, it's a servant, Arthur, that shuffles a little bit and sings.
Yo, man, what?
Hey, Q, you can't play. Listen, I hope you ain't wasting my time. You know how I feel about giving these movies my money. You know what I'm saying? I work hard for it.
Come on, man. It's gonna be dope, man.
Movies chill, man.
Hey, I'm chill too, man. But you know what I'm saying? I just don't, I can't go for this Steel Magnolia shit. You know what I'm saying?
Cool, man. Cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's feature presentation, Driving Miss Daisy.
No, man.
This is what I'm talking about.
Terms of endearment. I'm out of here, man.
Hey, yo, check it out, man. I got Black C's at the crib, man. Y'all want to go check that out?
Yeah. That's the idea. We could have rolled it from the beginning. Y'all with it,
man. Fuck Hollywood, man.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News in conjunction with UNITV Media. And once again, for the third episode in a row, joined by students of the University of Maryland who comprise the UNITV Media Collective. I'm your host, Solomon Kamajan, and we'll introduce all the different co-hosts that are in studio in just a few moments. But I wanted to actually start off the show. I didn't want to be remiss without paying homage to today. 46 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated April 4, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. And today marks the day of his assassination, and the year before that, it was Dr. King, the same Dr. King that in 1967, April 4th, 1967, said that the United States government was the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the earth, and in 2014, little has changed, and so hopefully we can continue to embrace the work of folks like Dr. King, Malcolm X, Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, Ida B. Wells, and so many others who were social justice advocates and champions. And let our work, whether it's on radio, whether it's as college students, whether it's as teachers, let our work some way find itself to impact social justice in some small to even more significant ways. And so with that being said, I want to turn it over to Nellie Netterville, who continues to play an integral part in this series of programs. And once again, matter of fact, the genesis of this particular show comes from her herself. And so I'll turn it over to her so she can set the stage for our robust dialogue that I think we're going to have today.
Well, what we're going to be talking about today is how we need to support our black entrepreneurs in media, whether they be writers, film producers, directors, rap artists, whatever. We need to support them in order for them to be independent and truly independent, in order for us to actually have our own say in how we as a people are depicted in media. We can't really complain about how this is happening or that is happening in media, how we don't like this about the way we're being represented, if we don't support the people that are trying to represent us in a positive light, and we don't represent the people that are trying to present us from our own perspective instead of from somebody else's of a different race's perspective. So that's what the show's going to be about, and I just really want to open it up to everybody else in the room and just ask, when you think about black films or black media and the perception of it, and then the perception of black people in general now today, what do you think the relationship is, and what do you get from everything? And please state your name when you speak, please.
So maybe we can start with you.
All right. Hello again, people. This is Tatiana. I guess from today's perspective, the first thing, and this is a shame, that pops in my head when I think about black film is Tyler Perry. And it's like I say, it's a shame because he portrays all the black stereotypes that have been put upon us. And I don't know about anybody else in this room, but in my family, I don't even know if we have one black stereotype that, you know, we hear about, like the, oh, black people love chicken, you know, black people love watermelon. I can't stand watermelon. I haven't liked it since I was a child. But he constantly puts those stereotypes in his movies, and people go and see these movies, like, you know, people love them, you know? But yeah, that's the first thing that popped in my head as soon as you said that now.
Hi, my name is Malik. Just like Tati says, you know, I think that that one of our issues in the black community is that we don't have enough, you know, positive images within films, and we don't have enough strong black names out there. I mean, we have some, but there's only, if we ask anyone down the street, we'll get the same handful every time. We'll hear Samuel Jackson or Denzel Washington, but we don't have enough, and we don't have enough coming from the younger generation. We have all these guys who've been around for years, but those guys are going to be leaving us soon, and we need more from the newer generation, and we need not just strong brothers, but strong sisters, too.
Right on. Another strong brother want to speak up?
Hi, everybody. My name is Aaron. I completely agree. I feel like there's still a place for a lot of the movies that we do have, you know, like people like Tyler Perry and Malcolm Lee, like they do portray some negative, you know, sights that aren't necessarily depicted by the entire African-American community. But I do think it is a role, and it does play a role, and a good role in a sense. But I think the real problem, like Malik said, was that there isn't enough positive portrayal. You watch movies, you look at a lot of different, just anything in the media, and anytime it's pertaining to African-Americans, it's very rare to see someone be successful, someone to be happy, someone to not have some type of problem that goes along with the black stereotype. Like, you know, you never see a black man that has a problem, you know, being too rich, you know, like, you never see a black man that's, like, too rich and lonely, whereas you can watch any type of movie and it's like, oh, man, this guy is, like, super rich, but he never found love because he's, like, some, you know, majority person in America, you know, like, that would be popular. People would be like, oh, I understand. And so I think we just kind of perpetuate these stereotypes because we don't show that there's positive things that have been going on and show the change that's been happening. And so we just let everyone know, like, hey, like, nothing's changed, but that's just completely false.
And I would just say we have, I mean, I like what you say. I would just say that we have to highlight. That's, you know, I think that when Nelly opened up to horsey back off what she said, I'm not saying piggyback from all my Muslim brothers and sisters out there, the horsey back of what she said, that we have to highlight, because we know, like, we're in a room full of folks that are doing positive things, but we can't count on this dominant media to expose and to shine a bright light on the great things that black people are doing day in and day out. So that's why we have to support those filmmakers who are doing those kind of things and build up and be those filmmakers and develop those filmmakers who you know will you know exhibit all the different things in their film and their music that are going on, that are the positive things that are going on in the black community right now. And just to chime in on what Tatiana said, with the stereotypes, right? The stereotype, but and we have to remember these stereotypes. Like, who created a lot? We embrace these stereotypes. That's the problem. We embrace a lot of these stereotypes, but who created the stereotypes? The stereotype of the savage African, of the savage Native American. Who created the stereotypes? And then the John Wayne film, him riding on the horse, and people begin cheering for him, even though he's the one that's going and taking the land away from the Native Americans, but depicting them in the Tarzan movies. There wasn't a black actor in those Tarzan movies. These were all diminutive statured white men that were supposed to be pygmies, and they painted their faces black and their skin black to depict, you know, savage Africans. And this guy comes in, and he's supposed to lead be the king of the jungle, and he can talk to animals, and I guess we're animals as well. But who created these stereotypes? You know, it's just we embrace the stereotypes, unfortunately, far too many of us. But the stereotypes were created a long time prior because, you know, and it's fine. You know, not every black person eats watermelon. But if you eat watermelon, who trained you as a conscious person? Who trained you to think twice about eating watermelon in front of white folks because they said, oh, that's bad? Because watermelon is one of the healthiest fruits that you can eat. Watermelon is really, really healthy for you, actually. So, Muftau.
Basically, I'm Muftau Shinabu right here. You want my opinion on black film is that there's no lack of black film, black filmmakers, and black producers. It's the fact that, like any other media entity, there's not really, what's it called, a presence or support thereof. Like, I remember a line from Langston Hughes saying that the mountain, our mountain is the rockiest, but our peak is highest. So basically, I feel like it's up to us to learn about what these black filmmakers and producers are doing, because a lot of these, they don't get the attention that they really need, especially if your only way to public entity is through guys like Warner Brothers, Sony Columbia, like all those filmmakers. So the fact is that it's up to us. If we're going to keep putting our brothers and sisters down, then it's just going to stay that way. We're going to be talking about the same thing for the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years if we don't change and help support one of us. If this is one of us we're talking about, if we can support Fonda Rhimes every Thursday night, I think we can support someone else.
My name's Brandy. Just kind of going off what everyone else said, I think that the reason why a lot of these, like Tyler Perry movies have kept, like he's kept making a lot of them, is that people can still relate to them, but it's time for us to like stop just depicting like, oh, the black struggle, and this and that, and then start showing black success stories and support people that want to depict that. Going off of what everybody said, when I think of black movies now and like, Solomon was talking about the history of it. I go all the way back, and I go back to, like, where the first depictions of black people were in media. And I always think back to, like, blackface and minstrel shows, and we were joked in. And then as time progressed, movies started to come about, and it was still blackface, but then when we did have actual black actors come about, we were Aunt Jemimas and ashy people building railroads, always in prison or something like that. Then the 70s roll around, the 60s and 70s, and what happens? Black exploitation. We decided that we were going to take hold of this. We were going to make ourselves heroes. We were going to make ourselves better people. We were going to go in and be Shafts and Coffees and Foxy Browns. And then it fell off. I guess support fell off. And we ended up going back into a stage of everything's so violent. Black people are so violent. There's not that much good anymore. And then we take hold of it again. And we go into movies like The Woods and Love and Basketball, Set It Off, Soul Food. These are all what I consider real depictions of black people. When I think of black people, I know there are plenty of black people that have Sunday dinners with their families. plenty of black love high school stories that are in the suburbs. Black people do live in the suburbs. We do not all live in the inner city and have guns inside of our belt pockets and tattoos all over our face. It's just kind of like, but now that's fallen off too, and now we're getting back into that whole, like, the negative sides, like Aaron was saying. It's more Aaron and Malik were saying. It's like the negative things. So what about the positive things? And maybe not so much just the positive things, but just, like, the more realistic things. Like, what actually happens in our day-to-day lives? We date. We go to school. We have family issues, but, like, we don't have our daddy raping our sister and then our mama selling drugs and then grandmama shooting up people. That doesn't happen in one family. You know what I mean? We may have one of those problems or maybe even two of those problems, but we don't have every single black stereotype in one family, one immediate family. It's just not
real.
It's just not real. It's just not real at all. And it's kind of like, I want a real movie. I want to see movies like Higher Learning, and I want to see movies like Do the Right Thing, and, you know, I want to see us. When I look at a movie about us as black people, I want to be able to say, ooh, I can relate to that. Ooh, I kind of want that to happen in my life. That would be so cool if this basketball player came up to me and he was like, oh, you're so cute. And I'm like, thank you. You know, that would be cool, but it's like, you know, I can't relate to somebody being out in the street selling rocks because I grew up in the suburbs. That's just it. And I just want that. I want to go back to that. But we can't go back to that if all we have of the people that are writing, producing, directing our films are people that don't know us, that don't understand us, that don't know what we go through, that don't know our lifestyles. How can we have positive images if all other races see our negative images or only want to depict our negative images? It's hard, and it's kind of like what I was saying before. The whole umbrella of this segment is supposed to be about supporting. In order to get these positive images out, we have to support black people that are trying to get these positive images out. We got to support black film writers. We got to support black filmmakers. We got to support black producers. We got to support our black independent artists, because the more independent they are, the more real the depiction is going to be. The more real what they're saying is going to be and what you're seeing is going to be. If they have somebody whisper in their ear and somebody holding their purse strings, then they got to follow the purse strings. They got to follow the money. So, anybody got anything to say off of that?
I would like to go back to something you mentioned. You were talking about After the Blackface and then Gone with the Wind. I don't know if anyone else is familiar with that film, but probably one of the longest films I've ever watched in my life. But the actress, Hattie McDaniel, she played Mammy in that film, and she was the first African-American to win an Oscar. And everyone was so proud of her, like, oh, wow, you did this wonderful thing. And it's just like, okay, cool, she won an Oscar. She's the first African-American person to win an Oscar, but look what she won an Oscar for. Like, and people were like, yeah, that's where black people, that's where they prosper, right there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't alive when the film was being made or anything, but I did a lot of research about it, and apparently there was a lot of conflict about, like, why she took the role and all this kind of stuff. And one of the reasons that she said, she was like, well, this isn't who I am, but I will make money off of these people and, you know, blase, blase. What do you all think about that?
Well, that was one point that I was even thinking about making, too, which is the fact that we had a lot of great movies coming up, and you mentioned, like, how the phase of decades of movies kind of came out as far as media and black portrayal. But I think, like, really the problem is, you know, by each decade, it really just, like, our position in the media has been more so to give back to, I want to say everyone as a whole, but of course that includes the majority, you know, white people as well. So we're going to be taking up, you know, acting roles and in movies where we do things where we kind of, like, we please them. And it may be comedic to everyone, but it's still, like you said, it's not going to necessarily give us the best portrayal. And so, like, a lot of the movies now, You know, they may even be black movies, but it may be directed or person who's funding may be funded by a white person.
Right.
And it's only because it's funny to everyone. And so everyone can enjoy the movie. But at the same time, what we don't have is, you know, people like Spike Lee and School Days and old movies where we're talking about, like, there are black movies that are, you know, of course anyone can enjoy it, but it's like for black people to be able to watch and for them to be able to say, like, okay, cool, like, and get a message out of these movies that they watch and see something deeper than just an actor being in a comedic movie, like a movie with a message. And so, like what you were saying, like I just feel like we don't really have, we're not really producing things in the media for ourselves anymore.
Going off of what Aaron said, I kind of agree. I feel like a lot of black people take on roles because they're trying to get like a quick buck, trying to get their face known so that can maybe lead on to like bigger roles. Like they're willing to accept the, like you said, the lower roles, like Manny and stuff.
That's a good point. I really like where you threw that out there and opened that strain of thought that led to you. You know, we're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at it, you make a really good point in terms of who's behind. So, for instance, you look at, and Nelly kind of opened up, I'm glad Nelly opened it up with saying that, you know, we're looking at movies, we're looking at music, and the whole nine. So, who's behind, for instance, Chief Keef? We know Jimmy Iovine is. Jimmy Iovine went into Chicago, got a misguided young man. I mean, misguided young man, because I don't believe in, like, giving up on youth, but look at how old Chief Keef was when he was, you know, so-called discovered by Jimmy Iovine, 14, 15 years of age. And so who's profiting off this black death? I mean, you look at the drill music, the words that the lyrics that he's putting forth. And yeah, it's much more than what he sees on a day-to-day basis. It's promoting, you know what I'm saying, you know, black death, you know, black-on-black, you know, violence, if you will, so-called black-on-black violence, you know, in the most, you know, graphic of ways. In the most, like, senseless of ways and without any kind of context. Because if Chief Keef was talking about, this goes on in my hood, and this is a result of the lack of resources that white folks have allowed to trickle into my community, our crime rates have gone up just like they've gone up in white communities when a community is robbed of economic resource. He would never play him. But he has them there. Jimmy Iovine's behind him. You know, and matter of fact, I've told this story a million times, and I'll say it a million more if I have to. You know, Young Buck, you know, had that song "Fuck the Police," and that song never made its way on any of his albums, and that's because every record label has a lyrics committee, and that lyrics committee determines what songs will or will not make it to that album. And they said that song is too controversial. You're talking about police brutality, which is a reality in many, many black communities. But that song is not going to make its way onto the album. But, Young Buck, you can talk about referring to black women as bitches and whores. You can talk about degrading them. You can talk about directing, you know, violence at other men that look like you, other black men. That's not too controversial. That sells like hotcakes, and we're going to determine that. So we have to look at that. And we have to look at, you know what I'm saying, the ownership. We have to expand that ownership because we own less than 4% of all the radio stations and less than 1% of all the TV stations in the U.S. And so, you know, I think that this show is a good step in, you know, one of those many steps in the right direction towards expanding that dialogue. You know, so perhaps somebody's listening to this show right now who is an artist or a fledgling filmmaker is saying, wow, that's a good idea. That's something we really need to build. And Nelly, I hope you chime in on something you said off the air before spring break, where you were talking about a film that you would love to see. You talked about the film of the Haitian Revolution. And we look at Danny Glover, who's been trying to collect money across the board. And this is Danny Glover, who was in Lethal Weapon, you know, big-time films that he's been in. He's been in a number of big-time films, well-known actor. And this guy can't get any studio in Hollywood to finance a movie that, come on, the Haitian Revolution. If you can think of having a movie called The Patriot starring Mel Gibson about the American Revolution and all these other movies about Lincoln, who was a white supremacist, you know, all these different movies, regardless of what then regardless of what aspect of history, then you have to, you know what I'm saying, there's more than enough merit to be behind having a movie about the Haitian Revolution unless you don't want a movie about black people coming together and overthrowing their oppressors. So, Nelly, could you talk about that a little bit before you go to the next topic? Because I think that was a great idea you had.
Well, I myself find the Haitian culture very interesting. I come from a Creole background, which comes from Haiti, and I find it all very interesting. And my Creole background comes from more Louisiana than necessarily exactly Haiti, but that's where they all really originated from. And how they came to Louisiana was they fled Haiti when the revolution was happening. And I've read books about it, and I've seen like movies where they have like slight innuendos about it. I've looked it up on the internet. It's a very interesting thing. So what they did in Haiti, what the people did in Haiti to overthrow their oppressors, and then how they did it, and how they came together. It was like no other country has done it. No other country has been able to overcome an entire country that was oppressing them. You know what I mean? Like they literally fled. They fled. If they weren't killed on the spot, then the people that were able to live, they fled back to their country, back to France. It wasn't anything where it was kind of like, oh, well, it was a win here and a lose there. No, the Haitians took over, and it's the only nation where they've gained control back, yet it's still one of the most impoverished countries, and it's because that they're still being kept down by Europe because Europe's kind of still mad at them. And it's sad because they're like one of the poorest countries on this side of the hemisphere, and they are such a strong people, but yet they're being kept down, and they're still being oppressed, even though they won the battle. They won the battle, but they're still being oppressed. So I would love to see a movie about that, but we don't have one. And why don't we have one? Because we have no support for it.
That's right.
If we had support, if we had people behind it saying, like, oh, that is a great idea. Oh, I want to see a movie about black people rising up and winning and not losing and being strong, then maybe this film could be made, or maybe films like it could be made.
Right.
Spike Lee is another film producer and filmmaker who would love to make movies completely independent, but, you know, he kind of has to go and get help sometimes from other people, and when he goes and gets help from other groups, they tell him to take stuff out. But if he was able to make the movies the way he wanted to make the movies, he would. And he wants to make the movies the way he wants to make them, and he calls for our help. He wants our help. He wants us to help fund him. He wants black people to come up and be like, yeah, I want to see the original Malcolm X story. I don't want to see the white person's portrayal of it. I want to see what the white people want to take out of the script. I want to see the entire story. I don't want to see just like bits and pieces. I don't want to see the King James version of it. I want to see the full creme de la creme of who Malcolm X was. I want to see the full Haitian Revolution. I don't want to see it from the French standpoint because it's going to be completely biased. And some people might say that the black version might be biased too, which is true. But I think I'm on that side of the bias.
Right, right.
But we need support. It all goes back to like, so what are we doing? Why don't we support them? Why? Especially our generation. In our generation, why don't we support them? Why do we not even know about these people? Why is it that people on our campus, University of Maryland, people that are smart, people that have great GPAs, great majors, why don't they know what the movie School Days is? Why don't they know who Spike Lee is? That makes no sense to me. I'm just like, he is history. He is black media history. Why don't we know this? If we knew this, we could help, but we don't because it's kept on the low.
I mean, pretty much, basically, I want to go, before I go to Maryland and stuff, I do want to go back to Haiti, pretty much. It's a shock to think that Haiti is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, but it's one of the most persevering countries I've ever witnessed. Like, I don't care, like, if I've not been there yet, because they've been through so much. I'll tell you, like, they've been through earthquakes, they've been through everything. They're still prisoners of fear. Look at the guys that came out of Haiti that, you know, that's looking out for them, guys like Wyclef and whatnot. And if guys like Wyclef, you know, the Fugees, if people, I wish people knew who the Fugees were.
Most people know who the Fugees are.
Thank you. But basically, on a campus like University of Maryland, I bet if I told them, like, has anybody seen Above the Rim or House Party, they'd be like, what's that? Really? Really? And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, we know some of our student people, but it all goes back to the idea of what's it called. We can't be what's it called accepting of what the status quo is, pretty much. What the status of being like, oh, this shouldn't be shown in movies, so we'll just accept it. No. And also, I'm going to give you a different perspective. Like, basically, in Nigeria, we have this thing. There's Hollywood, and then there's Nollywood. There's millions of Nigerian movies out. Like, there's thousands of movies that come out every year, right? But what's it called? Like, a lot of the big movies, unfortunately, there happen to be, like, those dramas and those CGIs that are showing, like, doing, like, traditional. Where did the directors get the idea from? The West. Where did they get the ideas of, you're going to put someone down? The West. So, basically, that's just where I'm going to put that. I'm just going to leave it right there.
And something you said, just real quick, Tatiana, when you mentioned you made allusion in terms of what the Academy, you know, the Academy Awards, otherwise known as the Oscars, what they have been known to reward black folks for doing. So if you can, you know, play a stereotypical, you know, whatever they feel comfortable with us being. You know, they'll highlight that and they'll reward you. So if you want to, you know, if you're a Chief Keef, like, hey, we're gonna reward you. So when we talk about the academies, it was just several years ago when we saw 3-6 Mafia won an award. I believe it was best song in a movie or something like that. And the song was, you know, hard to be a pimp, or, you know, it was that song. You guys know what I'm talking about. They won the Academy. It was in the 2000s. I can't remember.
Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
Yeah, Hard Out Here for a Pimp. So they won an Academy Award for It's Hard Out Here to Be a Pimp. You know what I'm saying? And you think about that. You know what I'm saying? But that's the comfortable Negro. Mm-hmm. That's the comfortable, because I'm, you know, if I'm a white guy who embraces his white privilege and is comfortable with that, then I'm more comfortable with 3-6 Mafia getting up there and getting an award for that than I am for Malik. You know, if you were a filmmaker, then Malik, upright black man walking around, you know, talking about empowering, you know, black people, referring to black women as queens and not as prostitutes, and then you're not going to pimp them. Oh, no, for some reason, that makes me real uncomfortable. Why does it make them uncomfortable? Because that is a threat to their power structure. That's a threat to their dominance, and, you know, and that they're unwilling to share, because we know economically and socially, you know, the white hegemony continues to control that major, major chunk. You know, we know that because, you know, we understand, like, how devastating it is right now in 2014 for black people, not just in the U.S., but globally. So,
going off of that, you can almost, going back to actors and actresses, Halle Berry, if my memory serves me correctly,
yes,
she didn't win her first first major award until Monsters Ball, in which she played an abusive, on the whorish side, quote-unquote, woman. And it's kind of like, out of all the movies Halle Berry has played in, there's been so many films before Monsters Ball. Why did it take so long for her to get that Oscar? And why then? It's like, why that movie? When I watched that movie, I didn't even think that was her best film.
Why did Denzel get his first Oscar for playing a rogue cop in Training Day? His first, you know.
But that goes back to, like, who's giving these awards out? When are we awarded as black people? When are we awarded? We do good. When we practice those tricks, just like the white man taught us to. That's when we get our awards. But, like I said, but we can't make a difference until we just start, before we open our eyes and we start to support. And when I think about different people in different situations, I think about, I always go back to the older times, back when I was a kid. Cosby Show, A Different World, Moesha, things like that. And I want those back. I want those back. And I want people like that to be awarded.
When you speak about reward, that kind of brought me to one of the points that I wanted to bring up today, are black writers. And a writer, a producer by the name of Kathleen McGee Anderson, African-American woman, she wrote for Little House on the Prairie. She's written for a lot of stuff, right? But you don't really, no one really knows about the writers unless they're really big like that, especially black writers, right? So I don't know if any of you all remember Lincoln Heights.
Ooh, yes.
Right. Okay. I loved Lincoln Heights. Mm-hmm. It was just a quick little background of the show. An African-American family, and the father was a police officer. I'm not exactly, I don't really remember what the mom did, but they had,
nurse.
Oh, okay, yeah, she was in the medical school, she was a nurse. They had two daughters and a son. She was one of the creators for that show, and it took her 20 years to sell a version of that show just so it could get on television. 20 years, and when I found that out, I was like, wow, like, why did it take so long? And I didn't have enough time to, like, research thoroughly, but I was like, when did she start? And I don't know if y'all remember, but that show wasn't on for very long. I love that show. I'd get home, ABC Family, all right, we got to see what Cassie's doing, with her Italian boyfriend, you know what I'm saying? It was a very good depiction of an African-American family who was intact, but they had their marital problems, you know. They showed what was going on in school, and it was really great. You know, the father was a police officer. He wasn't dirty, you know. It was a really good family, but I'm just like, why did it take so long for one, her to get the support to get on television, and then it was off just as quickly. Well, not even. It was off really quickly. So, I don't know. That just reminded me of when you said the reward and everything, and I was like, yeah.
That makes me think about my personal idol that I look up to is Mara Brock Akil, and she is a writer, director, producer. Her most recent work that she's working on now is Being Mary Jane on BET. I'm not the biggest fan of that one. Still a big fan of her, not the biggest fan of Being Mary Jane. But she was a writer and a director for a lot of the Moesha shows, and she won a lot of awards for the different episodes that she did for Moesha, one being the episode on birth control. She also did Girlfriend. That was her idea, and she produced that. And it's kind of like, you know, she does a lot. She's great, but not many people know her name. We don't really know names of writers. Like, I'm really surprised Tatiana knew that, you know what I mean? Because Tatiana isn't somebody, I don't think she's somebody, I've never known her to be somebody that's, like, really into, like, films and finding out who produces or directs things. I actually am, because I'm interested in filmmaking, so that's why I know. But it's kind of like, we don't know who's doing these. We know Michael Bay. We know Steven Spielberg. We know, Christian, no, that's a fail. He's an actor, sorry. But, you know, we know all of these, like, white directors, white producers, and everything like that. But who do we know that's black? We know Will Packer and Spike Lee. Who else? Who else is out there?
There is a filmmaker by the name of Barry Jenkins, and I actually watched one of his movies on Netflix over winter break. You know, I had a binge. I was like, oh, we don't have school. We don't have no work. Let me do this. And the film was called Medicine for Melancholy. It's a mumblecore film, and mumblecore means, like, it's basically just, like, real life. It's, like, just going on what you would do. So you might not have too much drama, but you might not. It's basically just real life. And once I looked him up, I was surprised to see that he has a lot of films out there. But I've never heard his name before. I've never seen a film of his before. And after that, I was like, wow, like, this is crazy that an African-American writer, director, producer, we don't know anything about. But his film was really great, guys. I don't know. But yeah, we don't know a lot of people. We don't know these writers. We know Aaron McGregor, y'all know, from the Boondocks, who isn't coming back for this fourth season. I don't know if y'all know. He's not coming back. He posted on his Facebook. Yeah, what'd he say?
He's taking on the Black Jesus
project. Right, he's doing that one. So I was actually a little confused because I said, okay, apparently there's something going on with Adult Swim, why he's not coming back. And he said, Hollywood is a, what did he say? Hollywood is a business, right? He said to quote a white man. But he's going and working with Adult Swim for Black Jesus. So I was a little confused, but they haven't released anything else about why he's not coming back or whatever. And I don't know if y'all have ever seen the Boondocks, but one of the key, like, what he wanted to do was to disturb people, but for the right reasons, you know? So there would be, like, messages. Sometimes I'd be like, okay, like, wow, this is really on TV, but that was his goal. Like, that's what he wanted to do. So I'm anxious to see how this last season is going to be.
Yeah, but I'm going to, like, the Boondocks, like, basically, it's on Adult Swim, but a lot of people know about the Boondocks, but spoiler alert, it's not really critically acclaimed. Basically, like, there's more to, like, there's a reason, like, but for some reason, for the fact that now is like, Adult Swim is pretty much taking over the Boondocks, I feel like it's not going to be the same at all.
Exactly.
And also, I'm sorry if I...
No, keep going.
Basically, saying how you know, like when the producer, like his theme song was an artist known by the name of Asheru. Like, highly underrated,
from
right?
From DC?
there was a song, like, called Mood Swing featuring Talib Kweli. Like, I love that song. And check it out. Like, even in the mainstream thing, we see guys like Just Blaze and whatnot. I gotta put that out there, but check it out. Has he won a Grammy? No. Has Quality won a Grammy? No. Has Black Star won a Grammy? No.
Shame on me. Shame on me, too. Shame on me, because Asheru is one of my comrades. I know Asheru well. Yeah, Gabe. Gabe is from D.C. Asheru, he's from D.C. He's an educator, teacher in D.C. You know, he just released his latest album, Sleepless in Soweto. He's been touring back and forth, in South Africa. And, yeah, he's done stuff with Mos Def and Talib Kweli. And he's, to me, like, one of the most underrated MCs out there and perhaps one of the best MCs that most folks, so-called, you know, hip-hop heads don't know about. But when you were talking, the person I thought about was Dave Chappelle. When you were talking about, you can't, because Dave Chappelle made the decision. He said, listen, nah, you're not going to have me dressing up as a woman. You know, you're not going to emasculate me. No way. You know, and we know with Dave Chappelle's comedy, there was always that political edge to it. He was making a point. And so he took that high road. He said, listen, nah, you could keep your $50 million. No, I'm going to, you know, I'll be straight because I can do a comedy tour anytime I want to. You know, but no, you are not going to emasculate me. I'm not going to take the money. I'm not going to go the road that some other folks did. You know, you talked about Tyler Perry because, you know, he loves that Madea character and so forth. And we know other folks, you know, Martin did it as well. But Dave Chappelle said no. And he's another person that should be extolled for that principled decision that he made on behalf of himself as a businessman and as an artist. You want to go? Okay.
I think going off of that, since we introduced, like, music and everything like that, I want to jump into a song, just so you know, all the songs that we're going to be playing, except for the song that we came in with, they're all going to be coming from Funk Volume, which is an independent record label run by Hobson and his friends. It's run out of a basement. He runs it all himself. He does all the producing. They do all the writing. It's very, very Black-owned, and it's very, very independent. And he says no to almost all other record. Like, he talks about record labels to the T. And we're going to listen to Hip Hop Sinister, where he breaks down his philosophy on what modern hip hop is like.
I'm changing, man. I thought I was supposed to be this hip-hop savior, but I've turned into a sinister.
Yeah! Whack niggas prepare to die. You ain't got nowhere to hide. I'm knocking at your fucking door. You scared cause you know hell arrived. Niggas gon' get dealt with rhymes. It's just me, myself, and I. I low key run this rap shit. You don't know cause it ain't televised. This is war, gentlemen. My flow is filled with more venom than George Zimmerman in his car, chilling with a loaded 44. Tucked into a drawer, fidgeting and itching to find a brand new casket to store niggas in. Y'all just make me laugh and giggle. Call me out on track, the bitch, I pound on you like that vending machine that stole my pack of Skittles. Niggas thought the yard me dissolved and I was soft after my album Raw, but no, bitch, I evolved. I'm taking over shit easily. I rarely do collaborations cause y'all don't qualify to be in the league with me. I just let the beast unleash. Someone get this freaking leash. I'm snapping on all you, leaving every MC deceased.
I'm the motherfucking hip-hop finisher. Niggas thought I was done, but I ain't finished up. I'm the motherfucking hip-hop finisher. Niggas thought I was done, but I ain't finished up.
Motherfucker, we making history. A million independently. So kiss my fucking ass. Left to right, you get to pick the cheek. You don't ball, you just pretend you do to make the disbelief. But your label is fucking you like Ruthless Records did to me. Stop with the compliments. I've been locked in my mama's den, plotting when I would be dropping. This ops in the apocalypse. Bombing incompetent. Rap goblins mobbing the continent. Gotta be dominant. I'm surprised that God isn't vomiting. I'm wearing the badge, carrying your ass. Another badge cutting through necks till they barely attach. Me in this game, I'm one and the same. Like Aaron and Crack. The darkness is the rhyme, so make a flare with a match. You got skill, where is it at? I haven't seen it, who cares, more jack of genius. You'll get mad as I have you jack your penis until you throw up your own liver. I don't give a fuck, the flow ripper.
What? I'm the motherfucking hip-hop finisher. These niggas thought I was done, but I ain't finished up. I'm the motherfucking hip-hop finisher. Niggas thought I was done, but I ain't finished up.
Now if I stop being who I am, that would upset me. I'll never change for none of you whack-ass deadbeats. I struggle to change for Jay Christ to accept me. I don't even change clothes, shit, not even my bed sheet. When I step inside the booth and rhyme, rappers commit suicide and jump in front of a moving semi-truck like it was cool to die. Niggas is watered down, fuck it, it's time to scuba dive. Better get on your knees and pray to God and hope that you survive. Killing rappers like I condone violence. I murder you and when your soul is floating in hell like Ghost Riding. You won't last living in this cold climate, so don't try it. I know I'm ill, I don't need no pussies to co-sign it. Commercial niggas thinking they carry the torch. It's gonna be very hilarious when I bury your corpse. So next time you spit a fucking rhyme that's too simple, I jump kick your ass through the glass of the booth window.
I'm the motherfucking hip-hop finisher. These niggas thought I was done, but I ain't finished up. I'm the motherfucking hip-hop finisher. Niggas thought I was done, but I ain't finished up.
Man, I hate rap, but if the shoe fits, wear it. I become a freak of nature, all the kids stare. Who walk around bumping raw with the shit blaring, saying fuck school and dropping out like a miscarriage. I'm embarrassed, and I'm ashamed I played a part in this devilish game, making your common sense perish. But I ain't taking the full blame, cause most of you chumps running around here ain't never had strict parents. All of your brain cells rotting from weed. You feeling like if you ain't got it, life's not as complete. You having sex with every motherfucking body you see, with a past so dark that Satan to jump out of the seat. But still you out in these streets thinking you hot as can be, without the knowledge to lead, so you just follow the sheep, making sure your lame swag is all polished and clean, while your favorite rapper's like, yeah, he got it from me. You been brainwashed by a fake life that you used to living. When I say the word fun, what do you envision? Probably drinking and smoking out with your crew and chilling with clueless women. You trying to bang, bumping new edition.
Is that all you think life really is? Well, if so, then you're a fucking idiot. I honestly feel like grabbing your head and hitting it. Matter of fact, you don't even deserve a brain. Give me it! Do you even have any goals aside from bagging these hoes and packing the bowl? Well, let me guess. No, you're only in school because your parents make you go. And all you do is play beer pong and hang out with the bros.
Yo, society's got you living for a whack cause. You're a fucking adult with no skills at all. You don't read any books or play ball. You don't draw. You literally do nothing at all.
Still you fiend for the glamorous fruits you don't have, cause you idolize rappers that do. And all they say is I got money in a stack to the roof. And now you think that it's gonna magically just happen to you? How? Your lazy ass don't commit to labor. You pick something up, dry it out, and put it down 2 minutes later. Then you complain about your life cause it ain't getting catered. Now whoever tries to call you on your bullshit's a hater. You wanna succeed, you have to try. Or one day you'll get older and regret it all cause you can't provide. Your friends are lowlifes, don't act surprised. Look, just cut the bad fruit off of the tree. Make the sacrifice. Girls, stop acting like you want a guy with traits like Romeo. Bitch, that's a fucking lie. You always talk about how every man's faking. You can't take it and you want something real. Shut up, tramp, save it. Twice a week you put on your makeup and damn bracelets and head to the club half naked with your ass shaking. Pulling the lowlife nigga who claim he cash making till you let him hit and find out he work at the gas station. One of them niggas got you pregnant, now you can't raise it. But you caused it. Your actions made a fat statement. You want Romeo to act patient and stop fronting like he in the club posted in the back waiting. It's the club where guys put on a new persona after they get loaded with a few Coronas. They always shouting and wild out with habits that very few condone them. Then they look for beautiful brainless bitches like you to bone them. Then when they leave you, you cry and cry talking about, oh my god, I can't find a guy. I spent so many years and I've tried and tried. Why am I even on earth? I should die. You want Romeo, you're not worthy. You're cockthirsty, you're nasty and probably got herpes. Sometimes the secret to find is to stop searching. Try a new formula cause your last one's not working. The term real niggas publicly used, and I need to know what it means cause I'm fucking confused. Are you one for always busting your tool with nothing to lose or something to prove to homies up in your crew? Is it because you selling drugs to get loot and brag about how you done been shot and stabbed like it's fun to be you? But your life's a struggle, right? And you just hustling through. Nah, you hamster ass nigga, you just stuck in the loop. Man, why do black people gotta be the only ones who can't evolve? Cause you in the streets acting like a Neanderthal. It's clear you can't stand the law. You lost as an abandoned dog. And all you interested in is fighting, rapping, and basketball. I can't even fuck with you. Cause if we out in public, you gon' get caught stealing some shit and get my ass in trouble too. You'll get old and be nothing. Living life in these streets, thugging and starting shit with anybody mean mugging. Look at you, a real nigga, thinking your life's cool. Girls used to turn me down for guys who were like you. Till you grab their heart and shove a spearhead right through. Then they regret it because it wasn't the right move. Your real nigga talk seems bogus. A real nigga don't brag about being real as long as he knows it, and his future doesn't seem hopeless. A real nigga stays out of jail, handle shit and he keeps focused. To all you rappers who sold it out in the wrongs, you inspire the issue I wrote about in this song. You go to pile on the young who roam around in the slums. See, this is what happens when rap's overcrowded with bums. Hope the hour is long when I'm rolling out with your tongue. The man above is my guide, you know the power is strong. All you minutes and freaks are only in it for cheese, and the mass control limit was breached. Fuck hip-hop. They only in it for cheese, and any eyewitness can see. They purposely making the innocent weak. My existence on this planet's for you. I ain't only here to benefit me. Yo, we need to make a change while there's still time. It is hard, and sometimes I struggle trying to reveal mine. I can guide you if you feel blind. I just need you to be willing to journey into my ill mind.
And yes, and so we're back. And I want to get right to it because we have an unexpected special guest. And like I said, my bad because, you know, when Nelly and the other students were producing this show and putting it together and we were talking music, I should have brought up that, you know, my comrade Asheru was in this area and available to call in. And like I said, he's somebody that, you know, we're looking to bring on campus in the near future to do a talk and about his experiences as an independent artist and why he continues to remain independent. And I think he sets a great example because he is able to, he remains independent. He's gainfully employed, you know, is able to practice his craft and doesn't have, you know, studios. He doesn't have Jimmy Iovine telling him what to write, what not to write. He's coming off a major album, an album that I think is just, like, superb. It's called Sleepless in Soweto. So folks that are listening now or in archive, please Google Asheru. You know, A-S-H-E-R-U, and Google Sleepless in Soweto. Pick up the album. We talk about it all the time. We've been talking about it on this show. We have to support, you know, black artists that are putting out good music, that are putting out good films. This is how we do it, you know. Don't dub it, don't bootleg it. Pick up the album so the proceeds go to him and so that he can continue to be gainfully employed, continue to make the music he's making, and so forth. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome on my brother, Ashru. Ashru, can you hear me? Wait. Now.
Oh.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Oh, what's going on, brother? It's nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice, too, man. Thank you for that wonderful intro, man. Everything's good on this end.
Good, good. So I'm gonna ask the first question. I'm going to let my students ask the rest of the questions. I want to throw it out to you. Why do you remain independent? What are some of the major benefits from being an independent MC like you are?
One of the major benefits is that I get to control my content, control the way it is distributed, control if anyone wants to license it. I'm empowered as the content creator of my own content, my own art. So that's always, you know, the ideal situation for an artist.
Okay, this is Muftal coming in. I do have a question about like, what was your intention when you did the Boondocks theme song, knowing that this show has some sort of political implications?
Right. You said what was my intention?
Yes.
My intention, honestly, because the instructions that I was given by Aaron Magruder was so vague, my intention initially was just to follow his wishes and create what he said was he wanted me to make a song that was 30 seconds long that did not mention the TV show itself or any of the characters in it, and that was, in his words, as black as I could possibly make it. So that was my intention in making the song. And, you know, I'm always amazed when I hear people repeat the lyrics or play it on their ringtone or whatever, because, you know, I don't know if everybody understands the real meaning behind what I was even saying, but it's one of those visceral things where you get it and it's understood and, you know, it's kind of across the board. So I'm definitely appreciative of that.
Just so you know, I'm Nelly, by the way. My mom did actually have that ringtone back when the show first came out. But my question is, because you're independent, like, what is the hardest part about being independent and staying independent? Is it hard for you? What support do you need? What are you looking for? What makes it hard?
What was the last part of your question? What am I?
Are you looking for anything? Are you looking for anything from the black community or from anybody out there, like from citizens?
At one time, yes, definitely. I mean, you know, every artist wants to be appreciated by the people who consume art. You know what I mean? You want to have some type of audience of people that you speak to. But I guess as years have gone on and just through my experiences and travel and all of that, I've realize that it's different in different parts of the world, you know, and when I say it, I mean music appreciation, hip-hop appreciation, what hip-hop means. It varies depending on where you are in the world, and even though it's in a very original African-American, Latino-American art form, we've kind of strayed away from our original idea of what it is when we made it. We, meaning American culture. But in other parts of the world, they're still kind of in tune to our original focus. So while you may have artists who are popular here that are popular there and that radio stuff is universal, you still have a very, very strong population of people who want to hear the alternative, who want to hear the other stuff, in addition to the mainstream popular media stuff. And I feel like here it's more or less like, well, if it's not mainstream, popular media has no value. And that's not the same sentiment everywhere in the world. So as an independent artist, my intention, especially with this last album with Sleepless in Soweto, my whole intention was to make music for the globe, for the world, not just to be in this marketplace of American hip-hop music and how it's currently being represented, but something that I could get in Africa, in Europe, in Japan, and especially in Africa, though. And that's the reason why I named the Sleepless in Soweto. That's the reason why there are a huge African presence on the album itself. There are artists from Ethiopia. The cover art was designed by a very prolific Nigerian artist. You know, the artists that are featured on the album are predominantly from D.C. and from South Africa. Some of them are rhyming in Setswana, which is one of the 11 languages in South Africa. So, you know, I did that all with intention. You know, we have a deep African house record called So Amazing. It's on the album. It's actually doing extremely well in South Africa right now. I have a song with Raheem Devon called Gauteng, which is dedicated to the province, the Johannesburg and different areas of South Africa where I was staying over the last 3 years. So I made an intentional focus of pushing it to that demographic, to that population, because in my travels and being there and performing and doing shows and having conversations, I realized that they do appreciate my art, and in some ways more than my own hometown, you know what I mean, unfortunately. So I made it with the intention of pushing it over there, and I'm going back. I'm actually going back on Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday. I'm going back with Raheem Devon and a couple other local musicians, and I'm going to do some, we're doing a festival, but then I'm also doing some promo and press and stuff for the album. So, it's, you know, that's all part of being independent, having the willingness to do what you got to do to push your message and your music and your art, and at the same time being convicted and confident that what you're making does have value regardless of what mainstream media or any blogs or whoever has to say about it, you know. It's having that conviction and courage and strength in your own art and your own gift that you've been given.
Nice. Hi, this is Tatiana, and I'm glad you spoke about your travels and where your music is going on, because so many times people have this notion that, oh, you know, as an independent artist, you're not going to have this the fan base that other artists may have, and you're talking about how people in Africa are listening to your music, and people are like, whoa, like, independent though. Why you not supposed to have this? So I'm glad you spoke about that. Yeah. I just want to know, have you ever at any point in your musical journey been pressured to join like popular media or even consider it? Like just in the back of your mind for a split second and you're like, oh no, never.
No, I've had like friends or people that have come up to me after the show say stuff like, man, you so tight. If you could just rhyme about this, what these other dudes are doing, you would blow them out the water, stuff like that. And I always just laugh that off. But I've never had pressures of like a label or any entity trying to get me to do that kind of format. And that's another bonus of being independent. I knew going in, I started rhyming and putting out music in 98. That was my first single was in 98. So I knew then that what I was doing was the road less traveled. It was fine with me. You know what I mean? I am still very much a, I hate to use this word, but it's the best word I can use for right now. I'm still very much a purist when it comes to hip-hop music. And I say I don't want to use that word because it kind of denotes like, I'm real and y'all ain't real, and that's not what I mean. I just mean I make my music with the intention of continuing the legacy of the people who I grew up influenced by, you know, and some were conscious artists, some were not, but I had that balance, and so my goal is to continue in that tradition. You know, I don't want to make music that my children or my mother or my family would not be proud of, or that they would cringe around like, oh my God, you know, what the hell, why would he say that? Like, so I definitely have that sometimes comes into play when I'm creating. But then on the other end, you know, as an artist, I do recognize that I have that creative license. And if that's how I feel in the moment, then I'm going to express it in the moment, you know. But I've generally attempted to create uplifting music that when you hear it, you feel empowered, you feel uplifted. The words won't be detrimental for you to repeat over and over. You know what I mean? They're words that you can say and be empowered by. So that's very much with intention that I created that way.
Hi, man. My name is Aaron. I have a question as well. As an artist, you know, going forward, making that next step and continuing to make a better global impact and, you know, definitely seeing the vision and what you want to do with your music, what do you feel like you need in order to take that next step or to be able to make that next leap to make the bigger impact that you want to make?
Brother, I'm doing it. I'm literally in my moment doing it right now, and I wouldn't change a thing. You know what I mean? I just perfect example. I just recently got appointed by the State Department as a global hip hop ambassador, and I just got the letter. Thank you, brother. Thank you. And so, like, even with that, like this. My first tour of duty, so to speak, is to go to Bangladesh in November. And so I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to that part of the world. And it's something that I'm looking forward to doing, you know what I mean, as a representative of hip-hop. And I don't know if I would have been afforded that opportunity if I didn't stick to my guns and do it the way that I had been doing it, you know. And, yes, it took a long time to get that kind of recognition and what have you, but I didn't do it to get that recognition, you know what I mean? I just feel like if you stay true to yourself and you push it the way that you want to push it and you feel confident and comfortable doing it that way without compromise, then the universe will find a way to open up and reward you for your diligence, you know. And I really feel like the things that are happening for me right now all the testimony to me just sticking to my guns and doing it the way that I've been doing it. I mean, I've been to South Africa in the last 3 years. I've been to South Africa 8 times. And so it wasn't something that I intended to do. It's just how circumstances led for me to do it, you know. And but for me, they're all affirmations, like you're doing the right thing. Keep doing what you got. Every time I get the tickets in my hand and I'm about to leave, I'm like, see, This is my reward for doing what I've been doing. And every time I go and I do what I'm doing, I do it with the same integrity. I don't change a thing. I learn new things. I'm always open to other things. But if it don't jive or fit what I see for myself and what I see myself, how I see myself expressing it, then I won't do it. If it's not in line with my morals, my values, my way of doing and being, then I'm not going to do it, you know. And fortunately, I haven't had a lot of struggle or had to fight a lot of people about having it my way. I feel like now people kind of recognize that this is how I am, this is what I am. They can kind of point to me and know I'm going to be consistent in the way that I've been doing it. And, you know, these are now the rewards of that.
I'm really happy for you and all the success that you have worldwide. That's amazing. And it just keeps coming. And I hope that God continues to bless you. But does it hurt that you don't get the same recognition and respect from the place where you were born? Like, does it ever just, like, do you ever feel like dad? Like, I don't. Why is it that
no.
They respect me over in Africa more than they respect over in, like, you know, D.C. or Atlanta?
No, not at all. I don't feel bad at all. I don't ever have a regretful moment. I don't feel like, oh, why are you people feeling me like that? Like, no, I've never had that. You know what I mean? I've always just, like I said, I get affirmations regularly that I'm on the right path and doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I don't ever really have that feeling. You know, I went in not thinking that. I never said to myself, I'm going to be on that 106 and Park couch. You give me 2 years. Like, that was never an aspiration of mine. You know what I mean? So I'm doing it the way that I've been designed and cut to do it. And I think the trick for me was recognizing that that's what my path is. And now that I know, I mean, I've known for a while, but now that I know that that's what my path is, I don't have the aspirations of a different path. I have the aspirations of my path. And my path is, honestly, my path was to be a global hip-hop ambassador. My first tour was in 2001, and we went to London. We went to the whole UK, so London. We went to Scotland and different parts of England and the UK, and that was my first taste of, you know, what Black Thought said back in the day, my mind being my passport, that kind of like, I'm just going to rhyme and people going to want me and I'm going to come out there and I'm going to do it, right? But then after that happened, it turned into, okay, now we're going to do all of Eastern Europe. Okay, now we're going to go to Japan. Okay, now we're going through Canada. Okay, now we're going back to Europe. Okay, now we're going to Africa. You know what I mean? And so with each one of those trips and things that are happening, it started to formulate in my mind like, yo, I'm on to something here. And then you tie in the education stuff and all of the other stuff that I'm doing, it just kind of was a natural fit. And so I got to the point where I was just like, if I could just, you know, be still and do what I'm doing, it'll all come to me. It'll all work itself out, and I'll be able to step into whatever it is that presents itself. You know what I mean? I don't have to chase it, in other words. It's going to come to me. And so that's kind of how I – and that rule applies with anything. Like, if I was a trap rapper and I was hardcore dedicated to being a trap rapper, it would be the same principles that apply. But this is what my path is. You know how you hear people say, don't envy what somebody else has, because what's for them is for them and what's for you is for you. You know how you hear people say that? That's so true, and it doesn't matter what path you're on, whether you think it's positive, negative, trap rap, conscious rap, whatever. What's for you is what's for you. So, you know, I've always just stayed in, you know, the light that I got and just been confident with that, and it hasn't failed me yet.
Thanks a lot, Brother Ashru. I really appreciate you making time to call in. I know it was impromptu. But folks that are listening right now, that's the kind of artist he is. I mean, I just literally text him, said, can you call in? Next thing you know, he's like, yeah, bet I can call in, and makes that phone call, calls in to share his experiences with these students and myself in studio today. So, Ashru, I just want to thank you again, and we all, I can speak on behalf of these students, that we wish you the utmost success, and we wish you safe travels back to the motherland, and I know you're going to represent, you know, D.C. and all of us extremely well. So, you know, just much love to you.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it, man. And y'all keep it up. Y'all keep up the good work. The kids to create content. Y'all making these radio programs and producing your own content, that's key. You have to add that to the ecosystem, because otherwise, we're going to get overrun by other things that may not be in line with what we want to hear or see. So keep creating. Content is always king.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Peace.
All right, y'all. Peace.
Folks, that was Ashru, and that was a very, very pleasant surprise to be able to get him to call in. And, folks, all I can say is, listen, Google Ashru, and pick up his latest album. Pick up his latest album. Matter of fact, you could pick up all his albums if you can, you know, spare the change to. But definitely pick up Sleepless in Soweto. It's a great, great album. And like I said, all you got to do is just Google Ashru, A-S-H-E-R-U. And if you want to, like, sample some of his music, you know, first by going to YouTube, go to YouTube. That's going to be, you know, the proof in the pudding that's going to say, okay, yeah, let me cop this album. Let me pick up this album. So, Nelly, where do we want to go from here?
I want to talk about something that he said that kind of hurt me. It kind of hurt. I know he said he was fine with it, and I'm fine with him being fine with it, but it kind of hurt that he's experiencing all of this abundance of wealth in other places except here, and he's from here, and that kind of hurts me, because like you said, he's a good artist, you know what I mean, he's a good artist, and we hear his stuff, but we don't attribute it to his name, but other places do, other places treat him with the respect that he deserves. And one of the posts that stood out to me is that he said they do appreciate real art. Like, we don't anymore, basically. It's like, what do we listen to? We just listen to rhymes. They don't have, like, a real motive behind them. They don't have, like, a real storyline behind it. They don't have, like, a real... They don't have meat behind it. All it is just rhyming words together, like 5-year-olds.
and
that repetition.
Repetition, and it just kind of like that hurt, especially for him to say it and for him to just be like, no, it doesn't really even, I'm not even hurt by it because I knew it wasn't going to happen for me here. That really did hurt me. How does everybody else feel about that?
Pretty much, like, basically the fact that, yeah, that for Ashu to have the high esteem, that's great and all, but there are other rappers, there are other artists, producers, and artists of any entity in this area, on the so-called campus community, that do care about the reaction they do get from their fans. If I told you from the Langston Court earlier, they want that support, they want that drive and stuff, basically. But the problem is that they would have to, the fact that they feel as if they would have to go through that status quo just to get to that type of support. Like, if Solomon can excuse me real quick, I think we know of another rapper from Washington, D.C. that at one point wanted to be an ambassador to hip-hop, but then, what's it called, that was a little bit of a change, you know. So.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I mean, I personally think that the real issue is not necessarily, like, I'm sad for it, the fact that he can't get the recognition, but I don't look at the black community and really, like, blame ourselves for that. I really think that it's because, I mean, honestly, you know, we are the minority, and, you know, when you spread us out amongst America, it's really hard for us to be able to come together without some type of system, you know? I mean, the only thing that we really have, if you think about it, is, like, BET.
And we don't even have it.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm not, like, I mean, I'm in touch with, you know, my roots as much as I have, you know, tried as best as I could. But I mean, if you think about it, even we live in a society where we aren't the majority, so you're going to grow up, you're not going to learn about the people that are putting out conscious music, about the people that are doing these things, about independent rappers. The only way that I would ever have the opportunity of knowing it is whether or not my parents tell me, if they know, or if some of my friends tell me. And because we don't really push, we don't have a strong central media community for us to be able to speak and share these things with each other, there's no way that we would know about these things. And so it's really, more so, it's really sad to me that we haven't been able to build a strong enough community to say, okay, cool, let's look at the people that are coming up that need the support, or let's see people that are doing these things and are becoming in positions as a hip-hop, you know, global hip-hop ambassador, and be able to congratulate on these things. Like, we have no clue. I mean, honestly, the first time that I had a public opportunity to learn about African-Americans, black American society, was when I got to college. And that was the only time they would provide me classes. But then at that point, you know, not only do I have to pay so much money to learn about my own culture, but then I have to make out the time for out of my other prerequisite classes and things that I have to take in order for me to get a degree to survive in the society that, you know, I'm living in right now.
Right. I found it kind of funny that he already knew where Nell was going. Like, he didn't even let her, like, he answered the question before she finished it. He was like, no, it doesn't hurt me. I'm not saddened by it. He doesn't dwell on the fact that people here don't really know him as well as the people in Africa. This man is, he's doing what he loves, and he's getting support, and it seems like he's doing pretty well for himself. He said he's been in, what, to Africa in the last, for eight times in the last 3 years. So he's like, yo, it's
Bangladesh.
Right, exactly. So he's doing what he loves to do, and he seems, like he said, I haven't, he hasn't really had any hardships along the way, any real hardships along the way. So, yeah, he's really not dwelling on it. And, yes, I do think that we as a black community do need to start supporting these underground, in quotation marks, artists, because these are the people who are actually putting out real stuff that's positive and that's spitting, like, this knowledge to us. So,
that was going off of both what Aaron and Tatiana said. This, Solomon can tell you this, when I came up with the idea for this show, that was my main idea. I wanted to find a way to bring the different subgroups of the black community together, because we are so very separated. We are the same people, and we,
but there's a difference between inner city and suburbs, country and northern folk. It's just, there's so many differences, and we're so spread apart, and we don't get along, and there's so much disconnect. And like Aaron was saying, like, that we shouldn't have it where you have to come and pay $400 for a class, and then have to play catch up because you spend that $400 on that class just so you can go ahead and get a degree so you can live in this world. It shouldn't really. That's the reason why I created this show, because I wanted a way to teach, especially our generation, Generation Y, about our people. I wanted a way to have our people come together and speak to each other and understand each other and build on each other. And I think that's why I am so adamant about things like this and about people that are doing things like him, people that are actually going out and doing things that they love and they are very passionate about and making sure it happens and making sure that people know about it. I feel like we should know about our people that come up and they do things and they're passionate about it and they're successful. You know what I mean? But that's why it's so important to me, and that's why this type of show is so important to me. We need to build community, and we need to build education, and we need to start knowing and understanding and learning and being more adamant about learning these things and more adamant about seeking knowledge and more adamant about trying to support each other instead of trying to bring each other down or trying to find the easy route. But I'm very, very happy for Asher. I'm very happy that he's having all this abundance of, like I said, wealth. It's wealth in a financial sense, in a spiritual sense, in every sense. He's experiencing a lot of wealth, and I can't even express how happy I am that he can do that, even if it's not in America.
Well, I just wanted to say that, first of all, I want to thank Ms. Asher for coming out and speaking today. Honestly, the whole time he was speaking, I was just kind of blown away by what he's done, and I was just thinking the whole time, this is the image. This is the person that I think, you know, up-and-coming artists and just black people in general, this is the person that we should look up to. This is a man who is stuck by his principles from the beginning and blazed his own trail and has done incredible things, and I think for all the up-and-coming MCs, that he's someone that this is the person they should aspire to, not the 2 Chainz or the French Montanas are on, as he said, you know, the 106 in Park couch. That's not the ideal goal I think we should be looking for. We want brothers out here who are talking about the real things that are going on in the black community and the real issues and going around and just expanding outside of the United States. We're not only black in America, but we're black in the globe. And Mr. Asheru is going around, and he's connecting with brothers and sisters across the world and taking this culture that was started in America and going to other places and bringing and sharing this appreciation for a historically black topic and a black culture, and I'm just really proud of him, and I'm really honored that I could be here to hear from him today, and I'm really, really happy that he's an ambassador. I mean, and that is what he is. He's an ambassador for the black culture as well as, you know, the American culture, and I'm just without words for him.
So starting with you, that's a good point of departure. Starting with you, since you know, we have a couple minutes before we have to adjourn. If we can just check out, I think you led the way. So if folks can go around the room and give their last comments, and then I'll just end with a song by Pat Asheru that I just pulled up, and we'll let Asheru's music take us home.
Yeah, I think that this was a really good show. I think a lot of the problem is that there's a lot of people who are really ignorant about, you know, who the black artists are, who the black producers are, the black filmmakers. And a lot of people don't care to know, but it's a really easy thing that can be solved, it can be fixed. Like, it doesn't, it's not hard to go out and learn these things, and people need to be willing to step out of themselves and be willing to learn something new, and like Nelly said, like, learn, take in more knowledge, and be willing to support. So I think that once people realize that it's not something that's really hard, and once they are ready to, you know, learn more about our culture, then be something that we can all support each other.
Yeah, this show was awesome. Thank you again, Asha Rue. Just reward can come if you go the road less traveled. It doesn't, you don't have to be this big name artist and you going here, you got tours here, all this kind of stuff, but you're not speaking realness. You know what I'm saying? This man is going out there, like I said before, doing what he loves, speaking what he wants to speak on his own, and he's doing very well for himself. So we just need to think about that and take that out in the public with us. You know, think about, all right, I need to know, I need to do what's right, and sometimes doing what's right may not always be easier, and I may not always get as far, but at least I know on my conscience that I'm doing the right thing.
All right, so basically, what this show's reminding me is pretty much is the fact that we as a black community, like, we are all, like, if we can get the same recognition from other countries outside the United States, if we had that same support all around the world here, then basically you'd be giving Warner Brothers or Interscope, you'd be giving these record labels a run for their money, number one. Number two, this goes back to the part about black films and black media, is the fact that we just got to support our people, like, the own brothers and sisters. I don't care, as long as you're making sure it's a conscious effort to advance our community pretty
right.
much. So, and trust me, there are a vast majority of the artists that are not getting noticed, even the ones that you see on the radio, they want to get a progressive voice. They're not solely out to get that money and stuff, but the fact is that because they don't have that support, that's the only way through that mainstream status quo. So I really do ask everybody to look up these artists, look up the Asherus, look up the unsung movie producers, television producers out there. Basically, let's just have a very, I really want an advancement of the black community. If everybody can do it, why can't we?
Right.
I think we said a lot of, like, problems, and we claim, like, a lot of things is going on, and kind of how we don't have the strong community, and so I definitely want to, like, leave my last remarks to talk about, like everyone's been saying, the solution that's going to really make a change for all of this. And it really just comes down to education, you know. I'm pretty sure, you know, growing up, whether or not you know everything going on in the African-American community, African community as a whole, whether you know little, there's probably some type of desire you have to later on, you know, be able to give back to your roots and where you came from. And even me, I had a desire, and I can honestly say that I'm ignorant of a lot of things still. And I think that, like I said, the best way in which that we can not only ensure that we start to build this community, but then also know how to better give an impact when we, you know, as college students at good universities graduate and start working and making money and things, is the education, you know. Like, as of me right now, I feel like I get a late start, you know, because I have to start in college to learn a lot of different things. But I learn it now, then I know that it'll come out later, and it'll come out for me good, and I'll be able to give back. And also teach my children, you know what I mean, let them know what it is.
Going off of what everybody said, education, understanding, and speaking to each other. How, I, like Aaron, I don't know, I'm not even close to knowing everything there is about the game. I want to pretend like I do, but how I learn and things that I do learn usually doesn't come from school. I learn it from my friends. I learn it from people like Malik. I learn it from people like Aaron. I learn it from people like Solomon. I learn it from all these different people around me. And when you start gaining these knowledge, you just look it up yourself, and you start learning things yourself. You start looking up artists. You start figuring out people who are doing things, and who do you really want to be like? Do you really want to be like Lil Wayne, or do you really want to be like Asher? Like, you know, you got to find these powerful people in our community and just be educated. And going off of that, I'm just really happy that I have such a strong support system amongst my peers. And thank you guys so much for being a part of this.
So with that being said, I just want to end it with a song by Asher Roo. Once again, it's been an honor to be joined in studio with such bright, bright young minds. And my last couple words is, like, we have to, folks listening right now, including myself, we have to cease from this practice of seeking validation from communities that don't respect us. So, you know, so what if we don't get nominated by the Academy Awards? They haven't had our best interests in general for quite some time. So what if we don't get, you know, validation from Interscope or Universal, you know, Music or Sony BMG? We need to validate one another. We need to validate each other's work by supporting our work. We don't, you know, because as long as we continue to seek the validation from folks who have not had our best interests in mind or in heart, in any shape, form, or fashion historically, then we're going to continue to be on the outside looking in, wondering, and begging to get into masses' house. We don't need that. And second of all, we reward the artists. We reward those from our community who are representing our community. I mean, if somebody, male or female, man or woman, that comes from our community and makes music or movies or what have you that represent us in the most negative light and represent music that plays into the best interests of folks who are white supremacist oriented or just flat out don't have our interests, you know, in our best interests in heart, I don't think that we should reward them with our hard dollars. I don't think we should reward them with our social capital as a community. We need and when we do those things, then we set the example for other artists coming up. Well, look, my community doesn't support folks that rap this way or put out images like this. So you know what? I have further incentive. Let me put out images that are positive, that represent, you know, that represent revolution and resistance and the beautiful things that my community represents. And you know what? It will make me feel good, but also my community will extol me and will hold me up. So I think that's what we got to do. And lastly, I tell folks, please go to yourworldnews.org and check out if this conversation stimulated you. You trust me, I think that you will enjoy the second to last documentary that we produced called Hip Hop, White Supremacy, and Capitalism. And you just type that into YouTube, and it will be the first thing that comes up. Sit down, watch the documentary. The documentary is littered with independent MCs like Asher Roo. Well, Asher Roo is actually going to be in the part two version, the follow-up documentary, but it's littered with artists that are in the same vein as Asher Roo, like Nairobi Selah and Welfare Poets and Jasiri X, Capital X. They're all in that documentary, you know, laying down some really important, you know, history and expertise, and it will really school you in terms of how this game really works. And I'll just end on that, but I'm going to give Asher Roo the last word. And as we say here at Your World News, journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Until next time, peace.
Yo, a beautiful mind, one of a kind being, King Ash, baby boy of the all I see, and it all I'm seeing is a future so bright. You gonna ask Teddy Pendergrass to turn off the lights. I am the general, soldiers know my position. Quiet leadership style when I speak, it's not fiction. Listen more than I talk and tell less than I know. This game is to be sold, not told, that's how I go. It's called guerrilla arts for the tactic, not the animal. By any means necessary, written on the manual. Rough you off and ride on two just like Hannibal. The elephant starts the shit out of you and your mans. If you take it for a joke, get yo egg on your face. Niggas going for broke with each quote, no second place. But anybody still asking if ask you spit, hit them with the Clay Davis like shit.
What? What? What?
What you talking about? Man, get on your head. You should never ever doubt one man, $100 in a one-track mind.
flavors like shit. You know it's funky, 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 cause you heard it from hearsay. A jam that you love that don't be getting no airplay. As for my competition, they ain't playing the fairway. Thinking they'll catch me slipping shit, that's on a rare day. This is that boom bapper getting bit in the stairway. To play where the real liars in the lair lay. 200 from the door, guess it wasn't their day. Too many in your crew, and y'all gotta share pay. Ass vision is bigger, no pray for this picture. I use my signature to stamp me as the victor, the champ. Head nigga in charge, MC at large. My constituents got all this love like a DeBarge. Now that must be good for something. You say or nothing like the good book say. There ain't no future in your front and work. The MC breathe, you ask, give you what you need. Hit them with the clay tape, it's like shit.
What
you talking about? Man, get on your head. You should never ever doubt one man, $100 in a one-track mind. Man, get on your head. Work the MC Bree, do ask, give you what you need. Hit him with the Clay Davis like shit. There's one thing you should know about me. I exercise my unlimited potential. So when I run them streets, it shall be M-I-G. I don't only mean over these instrumentals. You talking to an entrepreneur on 1 million. New Ventures is my middle name. I bring hip-hop to the schools, the juvie, or public housing to give them youngins a little game. Cause out here, there people playing chess, not checkers. Be careful how you move around the board. Have you thinking you a king when you only just a pawn? Go to battle and die by the sword. My OG sat me down and gave me a jewel to this day I never will forget. He said, for every one winner, there has to be 10 losers. Which one of you, me? I said, shit.
What
you talking about? Man, get on your head. You should never ever doubt one man, $100 in a one-track mind.
What
you talking about? Man, get on your head. You should never ever doubt one man, $100 in a one-track mind. Man, get on your head. You should never ever doubt one man, $100 in a one-track mind.